Hello and welcome back to the Relationship Matters podcast. We believe relationship matters, from humanity to nature to the larger whole. I'm your host, Katie Churchman, and in this episode, I'm talking with CRR Global faculty member Sanchit Zagetta about OSC and mindfulness. Across this conversation, we discuss, what is mindfulness? How can mindfulness help us to become better systems coaches? How can the OSC tools and skills help us to be more mindful? The inner observer as an ally, the role of compassion, and some of the benefits of mindfulness, personally and professionally. Sanchit Zagetta is a systemic coach, consultant, educator, and head of continuous development at CRR Global. With over 20 years of experience, her focus is on transformational leadership development and systemic culture change. Her work in coaching education has seen her train, mentor, and supervise coaches and design and deliver academic, public, and in-house coaching training and accreditation courses. Her experiences collaborating with world-class coaching institutions and diverse clients have made Sanchit a trusted systemic coaching consultant. She advises companies and institutions on the implementation of systemic coaching and systemic thinking for both organizational and community development. In addition, Sanchit is a qualified mindfulness teacher, having trained with Jack Kornfield and Tara Brack through the University of Berkeley's Greater Good Science Centre. So without further ado, I bring you Sanchit Zagetta, talking about OSC and mindfulness. Hi, Sanchit, welcome back to the Relationship Matters podcast.
Thank you, Katie. It's a pleasure to be here.
I am so excited about this conversation today. It feels long overdue. We are discussing OSC and mindfulness. So I wonder if we can start by talking about what mindfulness means to you, because I know there's many definitions and interpretations out there.
Yes, I think that's a perfect place to start. So I'll start with a formal definition. I think it's always useful to have one, and I love the one that probably a lot of people are familiar with, which is Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition. And mindfulness is awareness that arises through paying attention on purpose in the present moment without judgment. And I love all the elements of this definition. So there is that purposeful paying of attention. And I think it was Yuval Noah Harari who said that attention is our biggest asset nowadays, right? And something also the biggest commodity that everybody's after. So I think we need to pay extra attention on where we put our attention in our lives and world, because otherwise it's going to get taken or hijacked by things and technologies around us and life around us. And so there's that paying of attention in the present moment. And I think the other really important aspect is without judgment or non-judgmentally. Because very often when we do pay attention, we have lots of opinion about things that we notice and that we see. And that's great. That's our faculty that allowed us to develop as our race and as human beings. And at the same time, there's real richness, opportunity, and lots of information where we are able to pay attention without judgment.
That is a beautiful definition, and it makes me think that this is so useful in all. So there's two sides. So there's both mindfulness can help us as OSC practitioners and to be better systems coaches out in the world. But also it feels like OSC has a lot of this built in the tools and the competencies. So I wonder whether we start with one side of that coin and talk about, firstly, how you feel mindfulness can be so beneficial to us as systems coaches.
I love that you're bringing both sides, because I think that's so true. And you're actually making me pay attention now to that other side of how OSC tools can help us in being more mindful. But as you said, let's start with this one about how mindfulness can help us and support us as OSC practitioners. Mindfulness for me, in a nutshell, is a way of developing our inner observer. So the one that can stand behind the waterfall. And the waterfall is everything that happens outside of us and inside of us. All the buzz and noise of life and beautiful things that happen. And equally, all the noise and internal landscape that happens. And if we can stand behind that waterfall and observe it rather than being in the waterfall, then we have the space to make more informed choices. And I think our job, in a way, as ORS practitioners, is to support our clients in making conscious and intentional choices. And in order to do that, we have to help them to hold the mirror to their system and who they are. And again, in order to do that, if we take one step back, we need to develop that ability to stand behind the waterfall, to zoom out, to have more of a meta view. And I think mindfulness really helps with that.
It's that meta view, as you mentioned, or I think it's always called that balcony view. And it's really helpful in this because it's so easy to get pulled in by a dominant voice if we're working with a team. Or maybe if we're working with a couple, maybe we have a preference for one person's opinion. And if we're not aware of that, then that can lead to potentially bias and our own judgment showing up in the session.
Exactly right. That's exactly it. And it's so easy to start siding with a position or a view or an opinion. And obviously any position or a view or an opinion is reductive. And part, again, of how we support the systems is to help them hear all the voices or whatever, as many voices as we can, and the system is capable of holding at that moment. And it's really important then not to get, again, hooked into one particular position or voice.
There's one thing you said in that definition as well around paying attention in the present moment. And I think that feels key, at least for me as a systems coach, not generalizing a system because I've worked with a similar team before and they have these same challenges, so I know this. Because I notice sometimes that story can come first and I'm not actually taking in the sensory data that shows up in the space. I'm sure, I'm seeing you nodding there around the presence piece.
Yes. It reminds me, like, just the fact that we're all aware of how much time we spend in the past or in the future. And then us spending time in the past or the future, either trying to prevent something from happening, trying to make something happen, trying to change the past, analyzing the past, and we miss what's happening in the present. And then if we spend time in the present or future, then we're looking at what's happening now through the lenses that are not completely accurate. But there's something really powerful about the present moment, being in the present moment, because, and I believe this, and I think in ORSC we also believe that, in that through non-locality, you know, law, is that everything is present in the present moment. All the information that we need. And all the things we might need and want in order to move into the action that we need to. So it is actually by not being present in the moment that we miss a lot of what gives us agency. And so that ability to let go of what we thought before or believed before, or at least hold it at bay. So I'm not saying, of course, again, there's lots of usefulness about knowing the history of a system or our own. There's lots of usefulness. So we spend time thinking about our hygiene, more the future, etc. But how can we at the same time also really be available to all the information that's here right now at this moment?
It's so easy, isn't it, to be hijacked by a story or a sense of something being a certain way. And that clouds the way you show up for not just one session, but all of the sessions. In many ways, it makes me realize that mindfulness helps us to be more neutral, would you say, as a coach, and take that step back.
I would agree with that. There's something that comes up that I'll share with you in a second. It's more neutral in a sense of letting go of the desire of the outcome. Free of that desire to have a particular outcome that then can have us stir or manipulate whatever is, you know, whoever we're working with or ourselves in that way, which we again know how important that is in our work to really be open to what's emerging rather than have pre-existing notions or where the system should end up or what's good for our clients. And to support our clients to also not have that attachment, because usually when we allow ourselves to be more neutral in that sense, to allow things to emerge and unfold, more magical things will happen. Actually, the systems will surprise themselves with their capacity to be generative and creative. And the outcomes can be much better than we would have thought ourselves, you know, were we to be attached to them. So there's that part. And I don't want to miss the part which I think is important in mindfulness and the kind of mindfulness that I particularly practice, or that there are many practices that can support us in that, which is vipassana, or clear seeing, that comes from, that has its roots in Buddhism. But in vipassana, there's a belief that actually the practice of mindfulness is a bird with two wings, wisdom or clear seeing and compassion, and that both are equally important. So while we want to be neutral in terms of not attached to the outcomes or not resistant to the outcomes, we also want to have an open heart to allow ourselves to be moved by the systems.
Yeah.
Because that's how we connect and evolve.
That's such a good point, because we're not detached. We're not robots. That wouldn't help us get that information from our own system of me. I think Faith has written about this in her book, about how can you love your clients? Because actually having that ability to care will help more of that sensory data to emerge within you. It makes me think a lot when you said about the compassion piece, about how whether it's when we meditate or whether we are coaching, we so often don't think about that lens that we're looking through. And actually, when I go on my meditation cushion and I'm just trying to get this done, because that's the thing that makes me feel like I'm a good person, it's not necessarily bringing that compassion piece. And that feels like a very important component here to actually really living in a mindful way.
Yeah, I believe it is. I think there's something about in what you're saying, that caring, you used the word caring, and I believe caring is a courageous thing, to be more disrobed light, or, you know, objecting completely. But I think caring is a very brave thing to do, but at the same time, the most generative thing we can do, being with that open heart. And I also think it's necessary, and not just me, but you know, the tradition thinks it's necessary, because it allows us to see more of what's happening, because we can hold anything that's happening with compassion. Whereas if there's no compassion, we might be sort of criticizing ourselves for what we see, or criticizing and judging the system for what's happening with them. Whereas there's huge level of acceptance in mindfulness that we want to develop. And that is also very necessary in our course practice, which is saying whatever is happening with the system is serving it in some way. Maybe it's unskillful at the moment. Maybe it's not something that we want to keep. And at the same time, it's serving some function. All the voices that are showing up are serving some function, are there for a reason. How can we call them with compassion so we can understand them and see them fully? And then the system itself will have enough intelligence to choose what's next for it.
And that really helps us then to move away from that fixing mode, which I know many of us, we can fall into. It's very appealing to feel like you fixed something and you did a good job. And I feel like this approach holds a different, it's not about outcomes or you getting to a certain point with the client. It sort of allows for lots of different things to emerge, and holding all of those with that compassion too.
I know, I hear you. Yes, there are, of course, you know, there's something really that can feel good in the short term where we go into the fixing mode. It makes us feel powerful in the moment, right? We can get that fit of feeling really good. And long term, it's not something that serves us, I think. It doesn't do us justice as humans, and it doesn't do justice to our systems. As I said, because simply cuts off the magic that sits behind that. Because, you know, we always, in horse work, we believe in that self-generated evolution of the system. You know, there used to be a belief in systems theory before the 20th century that we're just looking for some perfect systemic design. And as long as we can find one perfect generic design, we can fit every system in that structure design, and it's going to function really well. And then we woke up to the fact, you know, somewhere in the 20th century, that actually, no, you know, like each system has its own inner intelligence and wisdom, and it's capable of that self-generated evolution. And we are only there to facilitate that evolution. And of course, we want to know what's next for each particular system. We can't know. That is a bit of a humble place to hold, right? Because it's not about us in our know-how, in our answers. It's more about exactly sitting back and being an observer that can hold the space and hold the mirror to the system so they can evolve into their next step. And we'll be surprised, and they'll be surprised what that is.
That's such a good point around how systems has changed in terms of the theory. There's a difference. I've been learning about the difference between complicated and complex systems, and how complicated is, say, your car, and if it breaks, there's a part that needs to be fixed, but it's a closed system. Whereas the systems we're dealing with are complex. And I feel like mindfulness is the tool for that, but we're trying quite often to fix complex problems in complicated ways, and it's not working. We're trying to put it, you know, a round peg in a square hole, and we're feeling the repercussions of that. I think people are talking a lot right now about corporate window dressing. People feel that there's not a real systemic change at a deeper level. It's the show. Yeah, mindfulness feels like a really powerful tool for that, because it's hard to hold something that's complex. And actually, I don't know. Who knows what's good or what's bad? That's quite a brave position to go in with as a leader or a coach.
I agree with you. It is a very brave position. And it's a liberating position.
Mm.
And I hear you about that window dressing. And I've worked a lot with startups where that is modus operandi, because we've lived in a culture as well that wants us to perform at our best in all times, to give our 100%, to always gain 5 stars. And so it is a brave thing in that environment to say, well, I'm also going to allow for some messiness, because that messiness or perceived messiness is part of complexity. You know, it's like, how do I allow actually a complex system to in their full complexity, rather than try, exactly as you said, to fit them into the world that might be easier for us to comprehend in the moment, but actually reduces their capacity and their inner wisdom.
That's exactly it, that intelligent, generative and creative nature. It's hard for us to hold as human beings, because their time frame or their version of intelligence might be different from ours. But when we're mindful, it feels like we're able to hold more in that container.
Yeah.
In terms of how mindfulness shows up in the AWS tools and techniques, where are some places you see this?
I love your question. I'm going to start sharing some answers and maybe we can think together. And I'm thinking both in tools and thinking in meta skills that we hold. I'm thinking in different skills. So let's look at all of them together. Because I think even just the premise of the third entity as a, you know, tool that we use, but also the concept, is very much connected to mindfulness. And if we can practice seeing the third entity, it can help us be still mindful in the moment. Meaning, you know, when we are not mindful, exactly as you said before, we're trying to fix one little thing that we notice is maybe not working, or to focus on just one tiny aspect or a tiny voice. Whereas really understanding it and sitting and standing in the position of the third entity all of a sudden opens up that field and allows us to pay attention to what is there right now in the moment. And ORSC really invites us to use all the channels, which is another thing about mindfulness. So not to just be focused on our thoughts, but to use different faculties and different senses and different experiences, channels, to actually get the information in the moment. The skill of unfolding, I think, is very much something that is developing our ability to be present in the moment, paying attention to arising signals and allowing them to unfold without judgment or attachment to where that's going to go. I actually think that's a perfect practice for mindfulness.
And it's amazing if we think about it both in terms of our own system and then the systems we work with. I know with me, it's very easy to, and I'm sure this is the case for many people, if say I've got back pain right now, and it can be very easy to go to the story of, oh, back pain, as opposed to actually the sensory experience, which actually isn't this sort of blanket statement, back pain, it's moving and it's shifting and it's not actually that bad compared to how it was yesterday. And that's very different. And then if we apply that to our systems, it could be very easy if a system starts arguing, say, okay, they're arguing again. Yeah, it's bad, tension's here. but not actually tune into how they're arguing and what's the intricacies in that and what are the dynamics between the people arguing.
Exactly.
Very easy to broad brushstroke, I think, if we're not in that mindful space.
Yes. And even, I mean, they use just one example of a tool and a skill. And even if we think about the RSI principles, the principle of the systems being in a constant state of emergence, that's what mindfulness is about. Like really not believing that the past, where they were in the past, is where they are now. So, and that is, again, paying attention to what's arising now, and really believing that things are changing and that whatever we experience or feel or notice is phenomena that's arising and will be disappearing in a second and something else will be in its place. And I think that principle of emergence captures that so well.
Not thought about that before, but it is in some ways a mindfulness practice. And when I've come away from really great sessions, and by great, I mean in terms of the way I've shown up, it's normally because it's felt like a meditation, which sounds strange, but it's almost like meditation off the cushion. Yeah, it's wonderful when we catch that. And of course, it's probably impossible to be 100% mindful all the time as a systems coach because there's too much going on. But the more we can dial that up, wow, the more we can see and hold on their behalf.
Yes, all of that, you know, and then noticing, also developing our observer in respect of noticing when we are really present with the system and aligning that, and when we go into potentially any other mode or wanting to know or moving toward the outcome, which is also fine, but just that ability to then notice and see the patterns and realize what our own tendencies might be and how to hold them with compassion. What are the moments in the coaching session? You know, when I go into the linear and this is the way to do it mode, or which clients are those where I tend to be like that? And when can I be a bit more open? And again, with no judgment, because all of that is data and all of that is created, of course, in interplay with our clients and with a wider system. So, of course, there's also that inner humbleness. We go back to that term, but that it's not all upon us. But where we do have an agency is to pay attention in the present moment.
That's so interesting, because I guess what I spoke to was that idea that so many people have that, well, meditation, they think often is about getting rid of the thoughts, but actually it's being aware of the thoughts. And so the inner observer, even if the inner observer is noticing that you're distracted and not really paying attention, that's information. And we should be kind and compassionate with that too.
Exactly. That's exactly it. You know, it's like meditation, the same as or squirt, will not remove our humanity.
Yeah.
And I think we don't want it.
No.
So we produce thoughts and more on some days and less on some other days. And occasionally we sit on the cushion and there's going to be lots of thoughts, you know, that waterfall is going to be heavy. And there's nothing wrong with that. Our job is just to sit and observe and hold it with compassion. And there are going to be another days when that water is just maybe trickling and you see a lot of sky behind and a lot of sunshine and your mind is vast and empty, and that's great too. Both are equally useful. So it's really important not to fall in the trap of perfection in meditation itself, or in being the mindful or practitioner, which we can do as well, but it takes us away from actually being mindful.
That's so true, and it's so easy to fall into that trap, and I've fallen into it many times before, and I realized I did it on this call. And it's fascinating, isn't it, how we have this sense of being this really calm, Dalai Lama-esque figure, but actually that's not necessarily what being mindful is about. And it could be that if you're feeling, I don't know, some energy in you, that's a system signal because you're also in the system and observing it. And that might be something you speak to. Oh, I'm noticing I'm very energized today. Is anyone else feeling that too? I mean, that's parallel processing, as Marita talks to a lot. But there's so much data and wisdom there that I think we often marginalize as well because we're trying to be so present for everyone else.
Yeah. And that's another way of practicing mindfulness, really being aware of that parallel process and that sense of interconnectedness with everything. And actually knowing that the waves of information run through parallel systems at the same time. And as you said, again, whether we notice lots of energy or lack of energy, it's just data that has no meaning on its own. It's going to shift. And of course, we're going to work with our clients to understand what it means for them at that particular moment. And again, let go. Because the moment they can see it and think it and hold it in their mind, then something else will emerge again.
It's so interesting how much we miss if we're not paying attention in the present moment.
Yes. And, you know, and I just want to acknowledge also we'll miss a lot even if we do. And that's okay, right? And so but we might notice more. We might notice more relevant data on a good day. And so there's something invitation to follow that with compassion as well on a good day. Some days we'll notice more, some days we'll notice less. But there's something about, and we always speak about that in ours, about our intention to be present, intention to be non-judgmental, intention to bring compassion. And then that's all that's required of us. And noticing when we wander away, and two famous golden words in mindfulness meditation are begin again. So again, there's no judgment, but we always have an opportunity to begin again when we notice that we drifted away from our role or from being present or from our heart or from being connected to our client. There's always the opportunity to come back to the anchor. And in mindfulness, that anchor might be breath or it might be our body. And in ORSC, I believe that anchor is also our relationship. And so our relationship becomes an anchor. Our relationship with the client and the wider system becomes an anchor that we can always come back to. So whenever we drift into our ideal, what the system should be like, or whenever we go into self-judgment about how bad coaching is today on our part, or whenever we go into being triggered by the client, how difficult they are, or how wonderful they are, we can sort of go back to the breath, that relationship ease insistence, and all the information that we need will be there.
That's beautiful. I imagine that applies as much professionally as personally. And it makes me think how so often in our personal lives, it's very easy for people to get stuck in certain roles or for us to generalize them because we've been together for X amount of years. And how lovely to have relationship as the breath, the anchor. And you keep coming back to it, and you'll get thrown off for many, many, many times, but you keep coming back. I love that.
Relationship is an anchor. Exactly that. It's our word to come back to. Because the same is, I think that's also a parallel between ORSC and mindfulness. You know, we think of breath. Why is that an anchor that's so often used? Because it just happens. We don't have to pay attention to it. It happens.
Yeah.
But when we start paying attention to it, we notice a lot about our life. Because our breath is very often the mirror of our lives. You know, when it's deep and our inhales are strong, we're probably at a different place in our lives than when it's shallow or fast. And yet, that breath, although it serves us as a mirror, is constantly breathing itself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there's something about relationships in the same way. So, of course, our job and when we engage in ORSC work, we are supporting our clients and we are paying attention to say, what's the flavor of that relationship today? What are we noticing about it? Is it, you know, is it breathing in a deep and grounded way or in a shallow way, or what's happening? Not making up any meaning about it other than being curious and unfolding. And at the same time, whether we do that or not, the relationship is breathing itself. It exists. Its essence is forever there. It just happens. And I think that can be a very grounding thing in itself, to trust that that's there.
That's brilliant. I love that, because it sort of shows us that we don't have to do anything. We're not adding anything else. We're just revealing what's already there. The breath is so useful, I think, because you realize you can do it waiting in queue for your coffee. You can suddenly just connect the breath. But relationship, yeah, is always there as well. And we can always come back to that. But if we don't, we know that it's there too.
Yes, yes. Which again, and what you were saying, I love that, because again, you know, another skill of competency of revealing the system to itself is actually a mindfulness competency in a way. That's what we do in meditation, and that's what we do in ORSC.
Yeah. So I'm curious. I know you've been practicing this for many years. Where are the places in your life where this has impacted you the most professionally and perhaps personally?
Oh, are there any where it wasn't? That's a great question. I think what would be maybe what stands out for me. Let me get connected to that now. The three things come up, and I'll share all three of them. One is I feel what has shifted for me is that I'm more in that space of self-compassion, and it's through mindfulness meditation and worse practice, actually, that I'm somehow able to hold myself with more acceptance. And that has also allowed for a bigger range, more playfulness in my life, more breath. It feels more spacious. And that is a huge and such a valuable impact of really feeling and experiencing that self-compassion. And that has come from a meditation. And as I said, Orska as well. Another thing is actually it has impacted all my roles. I think I used to be more rigid in all my roles, whether that's a role of a mother or a role of a consultant or a role of a coach. So I believe that as a mother, I had more preconceived ideas of what things should look like and was more annoyed if the world is not in line with my expectations of what everybody should do and how they should be. And I think there's more, you know, curiosity and ability to also step back and notice what I'm responsible for and where I'm not. And again, notice that sort of things pass and happen and notice that longer arc of development, let's say, for my children and for myself, which I think is a lot, or mindfulness brings. And the third way, about 11 years ago now, I was very ill. I had cancer and started meditating intensively then and daily. And it has really helped me sort of hold that experience of being seriously ill at the time and engage with my body in a different way and with my experiences of difficulties in a different way. And it has been such a huge gift.
That really talks to holding all voices, even the uncomfortable ones. And I think that whole idea is easier said than done, because it's not easy to hold the voice of our own mortality or the voice of cancer. And it seems like mindfulness helped you to hold that in some way for yourself.
Yes. And of course, I fall out of it and go back to it. You know, like as most of us, I think, who have an experience of cancer becomes, in Orr's parlance, a ghost in our system that keeps coming back. And so every anniversary of my illness, or at the time when I hear about somebody else being ill, that ghost gets really activated. And not just that ghost, but the different voices and roles in my ear system get activated. So I get the one who's like knows everything and wants to be super healthy. And then at that moment, when I start feeling that fear of the, you know, that ghost triggers, might go into, okay, so you need to get better with your eating and with your exercise, and you need to take this vitamin. So a fixer who knows really well. Or there's another one who's in panic and saying, yeah, it's like catastrophizing, etc. And I think where mindfulness then helps me, again, on a good day, when I remember, to sort of hold it differently and to just notice what's happening and say, you know, there's fear arising again, and that's okay. And, you know, very often I talk to myself in the second person, which my teacher Tara Brach told me. So, dear one, you know, it's okay. You're just afraid. It's just fear. Fear labeling helps a lot. And we use that sometimes in Orsa as well. There's fear happening. And somehow there's a little bit more spaciousness that happens in the moment. But I guess one of the reasons why I'm saying this as well is to say it's not with any, again, we're going back to that complexity and messiness of human system, that work is not done. It, you know, it has helped me hugely. And at the same time, of course, there are days when I fall out of it, and there are days, but there's something to come back to. The same as we talked about in relationships, there's something to come back to. And I think that is so important in life at work, to have that place you come back to.
Well, that makes me think we're never going to arrive, because our context is constantly changing. And isn't that amazing in many ways? I mean, it's scary, of course, but it's also amazing, because we wouldn't be who we were if we were immortal and we were guaranteed forever. We wouldn't be making the decisions that we are. And so I think there's something about that constantly changing environment, bodies. We're aging every single second. And all of that is encouraging us, isn't it, to be present with what is.
Yes. And accepting that change. Accepting that change and that everything changes.
Which is so tricky. And of course, sometimes, or, you know, tricky because we only want the change we want or we think we want.
Yes. That's so true. And it's easy to say, who knows what's good or what's bad when it's something good actually happens. I know I use that sometimes and it's like, but yeah, I really actually was quite happy that happened. Much harder to hold when it's something that really is tragic or scary or horrible.
Yes. And even a little discomfort. I think what that makes me think is like, you know, where mindfulness helps us and equally or with it, who knows what's good or bad or what's bad, is to say, you know, a change might be just uncomfortable at the moment. And so this doesn't mean there's no positivity bias in saying, well, we need to get over ourselves and just seeing the good in this change. We can just hold that experience and then say, this feels really uncomfortable right now. I don't know how it's going to feel 5 minutes or 5 years from now. Maybe it's going to be the best thing that happened to me. Maybe it's not. But for right now, what I can hold is my discomfort. And if we have that ability to be with that discomfort, our experience will change.
Yeah, that's the piece, isn't it? It's not rushing to fix it or try and change it into something. I think we do tend to have a positivity bias, which I know in many ways is very good, but toxic positivity isn't helpful. And so how can we hold all of those voices in a mindful way? Thank you so much for this gorgeous conversation, Sanchitza. I'm walking away with a lot today. So thank you for coming on the show and sharing your wisdom and your light.
Thank you so much, Katie. I leave inspired by your questions and your thoughts and your way of connecting ORSC with mindfulness. Thank you.
Keep take care. Thank you to Sanchitza Getta for that fascinating discussion around the intersection of ORSC, coaching and mindfulness. Here are my key takeaways. Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition of mindfulness is as follows. Mindfulness is the awareness that emerges through paying attention, on purpose, in the present moment, and non-judgmentally, the unfolding of experience moment by moment. Mindfulness is a way of developing our inner observer, the part of us that can stand behind the waterfall, which is everything that happens to us, outside and inside of us. If we can stand behind the waterfall, rather than being in the waterfall, we create more space for ourselves to make informed choices. Our job as ORSC practitioners is to help our clients make conscious and intentional choices. And to do that, we must provide a mirror for our clients. This is possible when we are able to take a step back, stand behind the waterfall, and take more of a meta view. Just like the breath is often used as an anchor in meditation practices, somewhere to come back to, we can also use a relationship as an anchor in our lives. Just like the breath, it happens, whether we're aware of it or not. And when we pay attention to it, we see that like the breath, relationship can be a mirror for our lives. For over 20 years, CRR Global has accompanied leaders, teams, and practitioners on their journey to build stronger relationships by focusing on the relationship itself, not only the individuals occupying it. This leads to a community of change makers around the world. Supported by a global network of faculty and partners, we connect, inspire, and equip change agents to shift systems one relationship at a time. CRR Global's unshakable belief is that relationship matters, from humanity to nature to the larger whole. For more information, please visit crrglobal.com.